Hello, I'd like to welcome everyone back to the 10th Shi'ur in Sefer HaChinuch, the 613 mitzvot and the meanings in our lives. Today we'll be covering the last of the major mitzvot in the order that we've been doing up till now concerning Pesach. Following that, we will be doing two more mitzvot that are connected to one of the other mitzvot we've already seen regarding the firstborn, which is also connected to Pesach. And with this, we're actually wrapping up this particular parsha and actually wrapping up most of the major mitzvot directly connected with Mitzrayim, Yetziyah Mitzrayim, going out of Egypt. So let's begin now with the first mitzvah for this evening, the 21st mitzvah, Tzipor Yetziyah Mitzrayim, the telling over the story of coming out of Egypt, namely the Haggadah. The Saper B'inyan Yetziyah Mitzrayim, Belel Tedvav Nisan. So now on the 15th of Nisan, meaning the first night of Pesach, and in Chutz La'aretz, when you're outside of Israel, on the 15th, and also the second night, on the 16th, we read the Haggadah, Kol Echad Kefi Tzachut L'Shano, each one according to his ability, according to his eloquence, that he's able to relate this to everyone at the table. Hallel L'Shabeach L'Shem, Al Kol Anisim She'asad Lanu Sham. In addition to actually going ahead and telling the story, there is the addition of actually saying Hallel, the praises that we find in the second half of the Haggadah that follows the meal, and actually a bit actually before the meal as well, where we praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all that which He has done for us and so forth, and the miracles that were done in taking us out of Egypt and eventually bringing us to receive the Sefer Torah and Eretz Yisrael. Shneimar v'higata levincha, as it says in the pasuk, you shall tell your sons. Ukfar parshu chachamim, the chachamim have already explained the mitzvah Haggadah zuhu b'leil tu b'nisan rushach le'matzah. So this falls out on the 15th of Nisan, which is the time when you eat the matzah. That at the time when the matzah and the maror was before you, meaning when the symbols were commanded to eat them, meaning the things that symbolize the various connections to Egypt, it's at that time that we're going to tell over the whole story. It's most befitting, and as explained by the Chachamim in the Mechilta, Parshat Bo. Now, even though it says in the Pasuk itself that you shall tell this over to your son, it's lav dafka, it's not exactly meant to say that only your son, but avilafilo im kol briya, meaning any other human being. In fact, there's no other human being, even yourself. Meaning, regardless of the situation, there is a mitzvah to actually tell over the story of going out of Egypt on Pesach night. V'inyan ha-mitzvah, so what is the practical mitzvah itself? Shizkor ha-nisim va'inyanim she'eru la'avotenu b'yetziyah Mitzrayim. So that the practical function of this mitzvah is the mentioning of the miracles and the various matters that occurred to our fathers as they came out of Egypt. And how God went ahead and He took revenge for them against the Egyptians. That He says this alone, if there's no one else. Now it's important, in order to perform this mitzvah, you have to actually say it. It's not enough that a person just goes ahead and he reads the story, so even if a person was to be alone at his table, he should read out the story. Now, in front of us, we have the Haggadah, we have the story itself written out. It's very worthwhile that a person should make sure to have a Haggadah in the language that he understands, be it in Hebrew, be it in Spanish, or whatever else, that he's able to understand the story and that he can talk about it and actually fulfill this mitzvah. Ki b'dibur yitorer halev, because it's by way of speaking it out that it awakens the heart. And if you don't understand what's going on at the Seder, if you don't understand what you're reading, well, you're not actually going to be able to awaken your heart to truly be able to remember the miracles that were done. So it's certainly important that we make sure that we have something that's in our language. And the other thing that's very important and critical, and it's coming up very soon, is that we prepare for the holiday. Following Purim, as we mentioned before, which is willing coming up now in another week, a little less than a week, that there is it's incumbent upon us that these 30 days now that precede Pesach, that we invest time during that time, during those 30 days, to prepare for the holiday. There's a lot of laws to learn. There's a lot to learn about the Haggadah itself. The more you learn about the story, the more you prepare for Pesach, the more the stories will be rich and the more that your entire family will be able to appreciate it. I think some really fantastic things that I've seen recently in the stores, various kits with all kinds of gags to be able to use during the Seder, little boxes of lice, and you know, of course we're doing plastic lice, various other toys and so forth, different things to be able to act out at the Seder itself, all of that to give it again a little bit more of a richness to everybody who's there, and we'll call it the multimedia Seder. In fact, one year, for example, we all put on clothing, you know, go dressed up, traditional, like, you know, jalabiyah, you know, and things along those lines, meaning like different types of, Arab type garments, things like this. Again, the idea being is that it awakens and keeps the children awake and keeps everything rolling and gives the Seder, again, that sort of flair that keeps everybody interested and moving. In fact, there's traditions that usually you give the children candies or you give them nuts or something along those lines, even early on, in order to keep them up and awake and rolling, in order to be able to participate. The famous hiding the afikomen and so forth also comes from the same idea, that this way the children are awake and they're part of the Seder. It's the children, it's the next generation that are key to this mitzvah. We're going to go ahead and we're going to relate to our children how the miracles that occurred not only were for our forefathers, but they were for us, that we're all, each and every one of us, part of this entire miracle that God did for us, to take one nation and extract them out of another and to bring them into freedom, and not just free them from slavery, to free them from the poverty and so forth, but to actually give them their own independent society that extends all the way into this day, that despite the fact that the Jewish people may or may not find themselves in Eretz Yisrael, in Israel, their land, under any particular Jewish government or anything else for that matter, nevertheless, wherever they are, as a whole, they operate as one nation. There's no question that the Jewish people as a whole have a certain bond and unity that you find by no other nation, no other people that has been spread out or has found itself in a diaspora. That the bond that we have together forms from the miracles that occurred to us as we left Egypt. And this is now the time that we form that bond for our children and connect them in to this entire web that has for generations kept us as one people. Despite the fact that we find that there are extensive boundaries to where the Jews are found, meaning in terms of their level of religious observance. You find Jews who are on the farthest right scale of fanatical observance, all the way to the farthest left liberal lack of observance. Nevertheless, it's quite amazing that Pesach seems to be a tremendous holiday for bringing all of that together, and that you find that even the Jews who are the most distant still have a connection, still have a particular place in this holiday and get involved in it and have some part in it. It's kind of amazing here in America that one of the things that brings people together throughout the year, coffee, is also one of the things that has kept unbelievably a spark underneath the Jewish people in America, is also coffee. Meaning there is a tremendous hakarat hatov, a tremendous thank you that's due to Maxwell House Coffee. The fact that they put out the Maxwell House Haggadah, have made it available for, as far back as I can remember, has made it available in supermarket chains and various other means in order to be able to, again, perhaps for marketing or whatever else have you for their product, which is kosher for Passover. And certainly I think that this is a key product for people to purchase, simply for the fact that they've been, again, so instrumental in American Jewry's rallying around the most important holiday, perhaps, of the year. So, either way, I did, by the way, contact Maxwell House, the corporation, actually Kraft Foods, which owns them, to try and find out more about the history of the Haggadah. So far, I haven't gotten an answer, but hopefully at some point I will. I just think it's a remarkable thing. Anyways, this is the idea again, that we bring it to our table, we bring ourselves together, and we again transfer on to our children this incredible idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has made us into a nation. Mishor Shem Mitzvah Zo, So the underpinnings of this mitzvah, mashikatu v'korban pesach. It's the same things that were discussed by the korban pesach. V'en min hatema imbav lanu mitzvot rabot al ze. A person shouldn't be amazed at the sheer number of mitzvot that are connected with this, with these ideas. Mitzvot aseh, mitzvot lo taseh, positive commandments, negative commandments. Ki yisod gadol v'amud chazak b'toratenu v'munatenu. Because this is a tremendous pillar that is a backbone of the Torah and of our faith. We find that throughout the entire year and numerous times per day, we constantly mention within our blessings and in our prayers the remembrance of coming out of Egypt. Because this act in itself of taking us out of Egypt is a tremendous miracle that gives a stamp on the idea that the world itself is a creation of God, and that God's constant hashgacha, constant providence, is applied into this world. Meaning that God didn't just create a world that he walked away from, but rather that this is a world which is constantly on God's mind. In fact, we say that if for a moment God was to remove himself from the world would cease to exist. That there is this God, that he is the source of everything, and he is what causes everything, and that he, with his desire by him to do so, can go ahead and can change everything from time to time, just like it was done in Egypt. He went ahead and he changed the actual nature of the world through various miracles that occurred, each one of them countering and going against the very principles of nature and the way things work. He went and he performed for us all forms of brand new signs, great signs, powerful signs that never existed before in history. The fact that these things occurred, and I say fact, think for a moment, how do you know anything to be truth? How do you know anything to be emet, that it's 100%? Well, either you've experienced it yourself, or there's witnesses to the matter. Well, if you think about Yitzhak Mitzrayim, our forefathers, and we're not talking about 3, 4, 5, 10, we're talking millions left Egypt, all of them having seen and experienced what had occurred, and continued to keep their story consistent for generations, every Passover, telling over the same stories. That even in distant lands, when groups of Jews became disconnected to the whole of the Jewish people, be they the Jews of China, or the Ethiopian Jews, or any of the other groups that had gotten disconnected from the Jewish people thousands of years before, that those groups, while having very little sometimes in terms of ritual that may be recognizable to the modern day Jew, simply because of integration with the societies around them and influences and so forth, and being disconnected from the progress of writing down of the oral Torah and things along those lines, nevertheless you find that the stories are told over, and Haggadot, the actual stories of what occurred, are found in those places as well. For example, where the Jews of China, they found their Haggadot, they found their Sidurim, they found Sifrei Torah, they found various different implements. There's recordings of different historical meetings of missionaries and so forth with the people that lived there, recounting what occurred and what was there and so forth and so on. And all of them, and that means to say all of these different groups, all of them recount and retell the story of the Jewish people coming out of Egypt and receiving the Torah at Har Sinai. This is simply an amazing thing. And the fact that you have a case of telephone where the telephone line is fairly clear, meaning that we don't find that the story on one end changed and the story on the other end. With millions of people involved, this is a tremendous sign. This is part, in fact, of that miracle of the coming out of Egypt. Other religions profess to have no witnesses, or two or three witnesses to any particular event. Some of them of questionable idea, stature and so forth. We're talking now millions. So therefore, this truly is something which really does quiet the kofar, really does quiet the apostate and the person who wishes to say that God doesn't have a direct influence in the world and a constant hand in what is going on. Because we find that God's providence is found in everything in general and in the details of things. Dinei ha-mitzvah, the various laws that are connected with mitzvah, you're going to say there, shechayivim Yisrael la'asob b'layla zeh be'inyan sudatan. For example, the Seder, how everything progresses at the table, where every Jew is chayiv, is obligated to do so on the first night in Israel and on the first two nights in Chutz La'aretz, ve'hakosot sheyayin shechayivim l'shtot, and the four cups of wine that we're obligated to drink, v'shiuran, how much needs to be in East Coast, that there needs to be a revit, there needs to be this measurement of wine that's in each one, v'mizikatan, v'siduran, and when it's poured, and how everything is ordered. All those things are found in Gemara Pesachim. So now, the Sefer HaChinuch is going to, interestingly, give us a sort of a rundown summary of how the Seder works. What's interesting about this is that the actual Seder that he's going to tell over to us is slightly different than most of us practice. Not just because of the fact that there is a Sephardic twist to the Sefer HaChinuch itself, meaning in terms of its origins and so forth, and therefore might be a little different to most people that are listening. But also, there are certain different practices which today are not practiced at the Seder or are not the traditions of most Jews. So let's go ahead and read through the Sefer HaChinuch Seder, and I'll try and mention the differences that we find practically today. Hineni kotev lecha beni haseder b'ksara kasher shemativ mipi chachmei ador b'diuk. So he says, I'm going to write for you, my son, the order in short, according to what I've heard from the chachamim of the generation exactly. Interestingly enough, they would wash their hands before making Kiddush. So in this case, it would only be an obligation of washing one of the hands, meaning the hand that's going to hold the cup for the actual bracha, for the Kiddush. It has to be enough. Again, for the water that's going to clean his hand, has to be enough to wash one hand. And in fact, if he wants, he can go. He makes no blessing on this. And if he wishes, he can wash both hands without a bracha. This is not traditionally practiced today. Nevertheless, it is interesting in its historical value, but again, today, generally, when it comes time for making Kiddush on the night of Pesach, when we come home from the Beit Knesset and so forth, the general custom is not to wash our hands and in preparation for that. Now, afterwards, he makes the blessing on the wine and the Kiddush, and he does not, and everybody, of course, drinks, but you don't make an after blessing. Meaning, once the cup is then drank, the first cup of the Seder, you don't make any after blessing. Just this previous blessing, which is part of the Kiddush. So now, differently also from what we are accustomed to, generally the custom is that we wash our hands for the karpas, which is the first part of the Seder, where we go ahead and we take usually a piece of celery. Some people use potato, and there are various different customs, parsley, that you just take that and it's dipped in salt water and eaten, but it's eaten without a blessing. So you wash your hands without a blessing, and you wash your hands without a blessing. But you do make a blessing on the karpas, and that blessing of hadama. But now afterwards, though, you don't make the after blessing of borei nefashot after we go ahead and we complete. So in this case, we don't make an after blessing because of the fact that later on, at the end, towards the end of the Seder before the meal, we are going to be eating maror, another vegetable, and at that time according to what's brought down here by the Sefer Chinuch, then you would make your brei nefashot in the maror. This though is not the custom today. We don't make a brei nefashot after the maror, which is also interesting. Again, another difference. And the reason for not making again another first blessing is because there's no real interruption. It goes on from the time we eat the karpas all the way until the time we eat the maror later on in the meal. The other interesting thing is that according to the Sefer HaChinuch, you actually would go ahead and the karpas, instead of being dipped in salt water or vinegar, as is traditional in most homes today, they actually would dip it in the charoset, and that would be the dipping that they would do. Mosgin kol sheni, then you would go ahead and you would have, usually traditionally somebody else would actually pour the cup for everybody else, and this way everybody is like a free man, having somebody pour wine for them. Would fill up the second cup, b'korne Haggadah im shnei perakim in halal. So then you would go ahead and you would read the Haggadah, including the two paragraphs of halal that are included, and as part of that. Not mentioned here also is also the beginning where they break the matzah at halach ma'anya. This is the bread of affliction at that place. And at the end of the first section of Haggadah, so you would go ahead and you would lift up with one hand the cup, and you would make the blessing asher ga'alanu al kos hasheni, and you make the blessing, you go ahead and make this blessing on the second cup, and you would drink it. So now, in this case, you would not make a first blessing or an after blessing. The tradition by the Sephardim is not to make the first blessing, is like this, meaning there's no first blessing made. But by the Ashkenazim, you actually, and you'll find in most of the Haggadahs, and including the Maxwell House, which we mentioned before, there's making a blessing before this cup as well. But there is no blessing by everybody after this second cup. Now you go ahead and you wash your hands a second time, just like you did back for the karpas, except this time you make a blessing, even though he's, in this case, by the way the Sefer HaChinuch describes to us the Seder, this would have been the second time you would have said Al Nitzal Yadayim. So now, according to this tradition, they would actually take the half matzah and you would put it on top of a whole matzah. I mean, traditionally we have three, and in this case, usually when you make the hamotzi, you have all three. Then you let go of the bottom whole one, taking the top whole and the middle half, and you make the brocha of al achilat matzah. Anyways, everybody goes ahead and they eat the matzah. After that, you make the blessing of lechol maror. You would go ahead and you would take the maror, and everybody would eat it. And this would be dipped in charoset. In the case of the chinuch, it's just like the karpas also that was in charoset. But by us traditionally, the karpas was with salt water, but the charoset is dipped in to the charoset. And you don't make a blessing of borei pri adama because of the fact that we already fulfilled our obligation for the blessing back when we made the blessing on the karpas. As we understand from the Gemara that since there's no interruption, there's no need to make a second blessing. So the only time where Sefer Chinuch now describes to us the idea of what it means to have an interruption, and it says like this: you have to have a matter with two different matters in front of you. Shiakur adam dato min ha'inyan, that will bring a person's focus away from what's going on. Kagon da amri havlan v'unvarech v'kiyot v'zeh. So, for example, he goes ahead and he begins the benching. He begins Birkat HaMazon. If he goes ahead and he begins Birkat HaMazon, he's actually changed out of the mode of thinking about a suda, a meal, to thinking about blessing after the meal. So this would be considered an interruption. And this is an interruption of a mental level. Or the other possibility is that something prevents you from doing the second thing. So it's either an interruption mentally, I mean something else comes up and you're now focused on something else, or it's a case where you physically, I mean physically because of various restrictions that exist in halacha or something along those lines, prevents you from doing something. So again, same sort of thing. A person gets into various situations where a person, for example, is going to go from one place to another or something along those lines, where there's going to be, again, some sort of physical situation where each place requires its own blessings. Other examples we find historically are, for example, if you can't walk into the restroom with your tefillin or something like that. So again, the second blessings become necessary when leaving, although there is questions practically regarding this as to whether or not we make a blessing today. But nevertheless, there are those far as those opinions like that and so forth. Now, after you eat from the maror, you dip it. You go ahead and you now take the maror again. You dip it and you make from it a maror sandwich. And this is if you recall from the Haggadah, this is like Hillel. And what they do is you take the maror and you again dip. You take another piece of maror. You would dip it in the charoset and you would sandwich it with the matzah from the bottom matzah that we had dropped during the first part, the first blessing on the matzah. After you go ahead and you finish this, then you would eat your suda, you would eat your meal. Following the meal, you then eat a little bit of matzah in remembrance of the Pesach. It's actually a lot of matzah, as most people are accustomed to eat two portions that are equivalent to a olive. Which works out to be an olive's worth of matzah actually works out to be quite a bit of matzah. It is the better part, back then almost a complete whole machine matzah, less than that, but just almost as much, and it works out to be quite a bit. And the custom is that we don't eat anything else following the eating of the afikom and feeding of this last part of the matzah in remembering the Pesach. But nevertheless, we do drink water though afterwards, in order, because water itself doesn't really remove the flavor of the matzah that we had. And the two cups of wine that we drink following the meal, those also drink. We don't put those aside as a result of just trying to remember the Pesach and not have it, again, remove the flavor from our mouth. Now, afterwards, you wash your hands, and you do not make the blessing of Al Nitlat Yudayim. This is actually my machronim. It's following any meal in general, that you made hamotzi. At the end of the meal, you wash your hands. There are various reasons for this. That there used to be a very powerful salt that will be used during the meals, and by washing your hands, if a person would come to touch his eyes after the meal, he wouldn't, God forbid, cause himself to go blind or something along those lines, or unclean spiritual status that can fall upon the fingers in connection with the whole process of the meal and various things along those lines and the different reasons that are given. And then so you go ahead and you wash this, you wash your hands, and then you make Birkat HaMazon, and so forth. Now, the Then you go ahead, like I said, you fill up the third cup, because the third cup is going to be the cup that actually ends the Birkat HaMazon. Ufrech alav Birkat HaMazon, uprei pri agafen, v'alo l'acharav al agafen. But in other words, you make only the first blessing at the end of Birkat HaMazon, where you're going to say uprei pri agafen on the cup, but you're not going to say the after blessing. V'achakach mozgin kos rvi'i, now you fill up now a fourth cup. V'gomer lav at the halal, you go ahead and you say the halal, you hold the cup. It's like, again, sort of a sort of people that are free and they're singing about their tremendous freedom that's been given to them. So they're singing with a cup in their hand. So you sort of imagine this whole group of people going back and forth with a cup of wine. You don't make another blessing of Bori Pri HaGefen. As I said, the Sfardim do not, but the Ashkenazim do traditionally make the on the fourth cup also a Bori Pri HaGefen. Aval acharav mevarchim al hagefen v'hu shelo yehe dato lishtot od kos chamishi. Now, following that, he finishes the drinking the fourth cup. He then says the after blessing for wine, the al hagefen that you'll find in the Haggadot, because this is the last wine that he's going to be drinking, because there isn't a fifth cup. There is only four cups for Pesach. There is a sort of fifth cup, which isn't mentioned here, although it's not, we don't drink it, which is the Kos of Elyon Avi, which is placed on the table. But there are four cups that we actually drink. So according to the Seder that's brought down here of the Sefer Chinuch, you only make Borei Pri HaGefen twice. The Ashkenazi custom is four times. Akos shel kiddush va'akos habracha, and he mentions the two that he would say hold by, and that this is practically how the Sfardim do, which is by kiddush and the bracha of after Birkat HaMazon. Va'alagefen pamechad achakol akosod, everybody though makes only one time the after blessing for wine at the very end of the Seder. Va'arok koso matzah the mitzvah srichim, so you need four cups of wine and you need the matzah of the mitzvah, which we are talking about. By the way, the matzah, the halacha is that for the Seder, that it is important that you get a hold of what's called shmorah matzah, which is it comes in different forms. There's handmade ones and there are machine-made ones. Either way, people have different customs regarding this. Some people are very particular to have the handmade ones. It certainly has a very traditional side, and some people are very particular to only have the machine-made ones because they feel that from a kashrut standpoint, meaning that they're the most fully cooked without any question and so forth. Either way, according to your rabbanim, according to your teachers, the matzah though should be what's called shmorah, which means that from the time that the actual wheat was cut from the fields, all the way through its processing to the making of matzah, there has been people who have been carefully watching over the entire process to ensure that water doesn't come in contact at all with the matzah. Now, even though there is, it's called non-shmur matzah that doesn't have this level of care, which is kosher for Pesach, nevertheless, this particular praiseworthy matzah fits in with the entire mitzvah of eating matzah, in that this special idea of having this special shmira, special care that's taken over it, just like God took special care over us. So it is important, and according to many rabbanim, if you need to use this matzah, it's not more than just traditional, but a requirement. So if you check by your local Judaica shops or kosher butchers and so forth, you can probably order already starting from now a shmorah matzah for the holiday that's coming up, and various places sometimes will also carry them, but you should think in advance, try and order. Usually you can get a better deal that way as well. For those people that are intolerant of wheat and gluten and so forth, there are matzahs available that are made from oat. Also something which you should order in advance. If you speak to your local rabbis, they may have information of how to obtain that, and so forth. So this applies at all times and all places, meaning whether we're in Eretz Yisrael or, unfortunately, because of the destruction, we find ourselves outside of Israel. Nevertheless, it applies here as well. And God willing, we should all be able to participate in Yerushalayim. It applies at all times, meaning whether the Beit HaMikdash is here or not. And a person who does not perform this mitzvah, he's going to be bitel anasei. He loses out on an asei. So now we begin the 22nd mitzvah, and the getting into the last stretch of two mitzvot that are directly connected to coming out of Egypt, and last for this parsha, mitzvah pidyon peter chamor, the redemption of the firstborn donkey. If you remember back when we talked about the general mitzvah of redemption of the firstborns, we mentioned this mitzvah. It's a tremendous mitzvah that can be accomplished still in our times. I pray and hope and that someday in my life I would love to really be able to have this an opportunity to be able to fulfill this mitzvah, as being as strange as it is, but it is available. Liftot vlad chamor zachar shnolad rishon. So this mitzvah is to actually redeem the first born male that comes from the womb of a donkey, yes, a female donkey. Shneimar ufeter chamor tevesei, and the firstborn of the donkey you should redeem. Ve'inyanahu, and this is the actual practical aspects of the mitzvah. Shalokeach Yisrael se'echad. So what you do is you bring a sheep and you bring it to the Kohen and you give the Kohen the sheep in place of the Chamor, meaning the donkey becomes yours and the sheep becomes the Kohen. Shehu l'shem minatam shekatvu l'mala. And the idea being is that again, that really the firstborn of the firstborn, as we said, of the kosher animals, the firstborn of man, and the firstborn donkey, these are kodesh. They are holy. They belong to God. So this is the process by which we acquire the ability to use them, and that's by redeeming them through the priest, through the Kohen, as a representative. So we sort of give a say in exchange for, they mean give a sheep in exchange for being able to use a donkey. Hu baruch hu natno l'kohen l'vichach podeo Yisrael imenu. So by him again, he goes ahead and he gives to the Kohen this in place of what God gave to him. In other words, God, this firstborn belongs to God, so therefore he's giving to the Kohen, and therefore he redeems it for himself. Ki Hashem Yivarach ratza sheyeh lo pidyon b'seh. God wanted that this would be the way it should be done, that a seh is the means by which this is taken care of, meaning that we use a sheep. V'im ein lo seh podeo b'dmei seh. Now, if you don't have a sheep available, you can use money, but the money has to be in accordance with what we're going to say now. L'fi she'en d'mei ha-seot shavim, because the various different sheeps are not always of the same value, and they have different prices. So Amru Zarazal, the Chachamim told like this: Ayin yafa b'sela, ayin ra'a b'chati sela. So you would be able to redeem with the amount of a sela, a certain measurement of money that was used in those days. And if using a full sela would be considered to be a proper eye, a good eye, I mean the way to do things best. With an improper eye is you use a half a sela. So and a midway would be actually three zuzin, meaning that it's more than half but less than a whole sela. Uzmana pidyon ad shloshim yom. So when do you perform this redemption? So you have the 30 days to do that from the time the animal is born. Vasei chulin biyad kohen v'chamor biyad Yisrael. So the say becomes non-holy is when it enters the hand of the Kohen, and the Chamor then becomes the property of the Jew before belonging to God, and he now has the ability to use the donkey for whatever he'd like. Therefore, if the Kohen decides, because now this is not sanctified, meaning it's not Kodesh, he can share this with others, and if you decide, for example, that you're going to have he wants to make a gigantic barbecue for everybody that came to participate in this fantastic mitzvah, and everybody gets to go ahead and eat from the sheep, then that's not a problem at all. Meshoshe mitzvah zo, the underpinnings of this mitzvah, k'dei shiyizkiru ha'yehudim l'olam ha'nesh yasah lahem akei yitziat Mitzrayim, so that the Jews should always remember the miracle that God did for them in coming out of Egypt. Sha'arag kol b'chorim kamo shekatuv, that God killed all of the firstborn of the Egyptians, and let us of course go free and all the firstborns to be alive and well. It's very significant if we look at what we just said before about the whole idea of Yetziat Mitzrayim in general, that again, being this show of God's interrupting the fabric of the world of time and asserting his desires. So here also, this is a very clear indication, and those diseases attack people in general. It doesn't matter one way or the other if you're the firstborn or the secondborn. So the idea that a specific plague should occur and occur with a precision to directly hit people based on their birth order is a clear bending of the entire nature of the world. Dini ha-mitzvah, the various laws connected with mitzvah, kagon shetafuach l'nochri o mekubal, shashitu, so shetafut l'nochri o mekabel l'chamor mimeno l'tafel bo, or the various laws, for example, if you have non-Jewish partners in this, in the donkey itself, v'din goy sheyefrish peter chamor madino, what happens if the non-Jew is the one that puts aside the animal for redemption, v'din chamor sheyalda k'min sus, what happens if you happen to have a donkey that gives birth to something that looks like a horse, v'din lokeach chamor migoy, what happens if you take the donkey from a non-Jew, v'inyan safeki im bikara madino, v'din noten chamor v'atzmo l'kohen v'yeter pratea, all the various details and so forth, these are discussed in Masechet Bechorot, in Tractate Bechorot. We know again, b'chol makom b'chol zman, it applies at all times, meaning it applies even today, b'zecharim l'kavod Yisraelim v'lo b'kohanim levim. And it applies, like I said, in all places as well. So, I mean, even in Chutz La'aretz, you can do this mitzvah. It applies to men and to women. And it does not apply, though, to Kohanim and Levim. So, someone who's a Kohen or Levi, he would not be able to fulfill the mitzvah from the perspective of again, doing the redemption. Although the Kohen is part of it in his acceptance of the acceptance of the sheep on behalf of the owner. Somebody who does not redeem the Chamor, he violates a positive commandment. Mitzvah Tarifat Peter Chamor. Now, it's possible that a person does not wish to redeem. This is not necessarily considered a positive thing, but if he doesn't wish to redeem the animal, perhaps maybe it's not possible for him, whatever else have you, then there is an alternative, and this is the breaking of the neck with a butcher's hatchet from the back of the donkey and killing him. La'arof petach hamor im lo ratza liftato. If a person doesn't wish to redeem him, then he chops his head off. Shnei ravim lo tiftei va'arafto. If you do not redeem him, then you behead him. In Yana, what's the practical application? This shoreg v'lada hamor im lo ratza liftato v'gazar Hashem shelo yene. So, if a person does not wish to redeem the animal, so therefore God says, I'm sorry, then you cannot have benefit from this animal that does not belong to you. In fact, even the actual dead animal, after you've broken its neck, is not something which you're allowed to have any benefits for. You couldn't give it to your dogs or anything else. It would have to be burned and its ashes spread and so forth, and they get to having no benefit for you. The underpinnings in this mitzvah, it's connected to the concept, as we saw before, of redeeming. Dini ha-mitzvah, the various laws of the mitzvah, Masha Amru, the mitzvah pidya kodem al-arifa, it is considered to be much preferable that we redeem the animal than cause its destruction. V'she'asur b'hana imet kodem pidyon v'ikaver, and that it is, again, there's a soul we can't have any benefit if it dies before it's redeemed and buried and so forth. V'ki mitzvah la'argo v'kofitz v'lo b'dvar acher. Dafka, you have to use a butcher's hatchet. I mean, this is a somewhat brutal type of thing, pretty much to drive home the point to us that this didn't belong to us to start with, and that God gave us the opportunity to redeem it, and would have preferred it be redeemed, and it's making use of that which he wishes for us to use. So in a sense, this is sort of a very brutal way to make a point to you that God gives you everything in the world to make use of for your benefit. So both understand that it came from him, and also understand that it's really meant for you to make use of for all the good things in life. And all the various details are described in Masechet Bechorot. It applies to everybody in all places, just like the pidyon. And with that, like I said, we wrap up this particular parsha, and we also wrap up the direct mitzvot concerning Yitzhak Mitzrayim. There's one mitzvah that we're going to come across, which is the boundaries of Shabbat. And following that, then we get into the Ten Commandments, the Aseret Divrot. And God willing, we will have the opportunity to be able to learn these mitzvot together in Yerushalayim, which Mashiach Tzidkenu B'Mehrah Bimeinu. Amen.